And good morning. It's Thursday morning, and that means it's time for the 701st episode of Tom and Shane. Wow. 700 wow. episodes, Jay.
Whew. That's terrific.
What a library.
Yeah. We've done it all.
Yes, we have.
Yeah. Hey, if you're just joining us, say, if you're on YouTube, you got to subscribe, man. Come on. It's down in the corner there. Right down, you know, right down there. It's in there. Well, it's right down there, actually. Lower right-hand side. Just click it. Click it. You know, nothing will happen to you. You won't get a bunch of emails. Nobody will come to your house. You know, no bill collectors will call you. Nobody will charge stuff to you. Just click it and subscribe and ring the notification bell because you'll never miss another podcast. And like us and leave a comment because YouTube puts weight on comments and likes. So it moves us up in the search deal on YouTube. And also, if you'd like to support us monetarily, and why wouldn't you? I mean, the great information that we put out here, why would you not want to help us defray some of the costs of putting this thing on? There's a link in the description below on YouTube and on Facebook thing as well. So get over there and check it out. And we do these with StreamYard. As you can see, it's easy. Even I can do it. Our names are there. Our pictures are here. There's sound. There's video. It's great. And you can do it too. That's it's just that simple, Shane. I don't know.
They are.
And there's a free link in the description below. There's a free version. You can check it out, see if you like it, and boom, do the stuff that we do. And today we are going to talk about, boy, how the used car will save the car industry and the U.S. economy. Save the car industry and the U.S. economy. Shane, take it away. How's that going to happen anyway?
Well, it's a remarkable industry. I mean, obviously, it's been around since the beginning of the car manufacturing business. And it falls sort of into two groups, clearly used cars. And then new unsold cars are sold to rental companies as a basically as a used car, who in turn, after a year, because they'll replace it with new cars they purchase every year, they sell the cars. And recently, we've gotten some new internet companies that are now, picking up your car and buying it and selling you a car that you can do online. But the remarkable thing is that it's about a 41 million unit sale a year in the car industry, which makes it, a very phenomenal industry just in size. I mean, we're talking about 200 to 250 billion in annual sales. And that's expected to grow to 350 billion used car industry in the U.S. auto market. It's still not, of course, competing with new cars, but in the auto retail market is the largest retail market outside of new cars in the United States alone. 17.6 used cars were sold in the United States. And about 38.5 million were sold worldwide. So it's one of these things that affects everybody every day. And of course, the market trailed off because of COVID, and now it's trying to come back and having difficulty being able to find used cars because new cars are having a difficulty finding,
The chips.
Yeah, yeah. They build the cars, but they don't have the chips to go out and sell them. So it's sort of a crossover in what we're dealing with, basically a massive recession because of COVID that you swing back from. And we're watching the results of that, both in the market today and in the economy. And used cars have had an impact because one, two car families just having this need to revolve from one car to another. With the advent of electric cars and soon used electric cars, the economy is going to change again, take another step forward. in the 21st century. So we thought we should talk about it.
Yeah. Well, one thing I'd like to go back to, Shane, I'd like to go back a little bit in history and talk about cash for clunkers. This was something that Obama started. And the idea was that we were going to get these old gas guzzling cars off the highways and off the streets. And what they did is, rather than bringing the cars in and refurbishing them and, having those available, they destroyed the engines of all these used cars. And it almost decimated the parts people.
That's right. The repairing cars.
Yeah. They couldn't get gaskets, couldn't get, there wasn't a need for any of those things anymore. And you're sitting there with a auto parts store with a bunch of stuff on the shelf that nobody wants or nobody can use. So
a junkyard looking for parts.
Yeah. So, well, that's true too. Yeah. Well, you could get doors and stuff like that. But you couldn't get engines because they destroy the engines to try to clean up the environment. And there again lies the unintended consequences of government thinking they're doing the right thing, but literally almost destroying a secondary market. And I'm not sure that this situation that we're looking at here with the used cars and the lack of chips. It'd be nice if we made chips here, but we don't. We make them in Taiwan. And
it's the genius of the 21st century, of course, is Elon Musk. And, with everything that he's doing, Tesla, you'll see it grow tremendously over the next 10 years. I expect they will move to over from a million, producing a million new cars to anywhere from 10 to 30 million, depending on his desire to open more plants. But, it's great because you see what he's doing in the auto industry. He's completely changed it. And, now he's trying to, go out like this Twitter thing we've talked about. I had an epiphany over the weekend. I thought, what a slam it would be as if he put this takeover with Twitter together with Trump. That would be funny. But, Trump, I only mentioned Trump because Trump, created an environment, for the car industry with the new North American free trade agreement between Canada and Mexico. They don't, on the basis of new cars, they don't create a huge part. I mean, there are other.
Well, we get a lot of parts from Canada.
You get 60%. That's right.
Yeah, that's where we get our car parts from.
That's right.
Yeah.
So yeah, Canada only produces about 1.5 million cars a year, but you're up in the 16, 17 million cars a year. Combustion engines, let's make sure we make that change. Yeah. In reference to selling of used cars, I just have one example is CarMax. It's been a company that's public. It's trading around $91. And, it was founded in 2016. And it's done quite well. I mean, they have almost 19 billion in sales. And all these companies, everyone saw, on ads on television for the last several years, advertising the used car and of course through COVID, as we've already said, but no one could drive a car because no one could go anywhere. But the reality is, where do we go from here? Well, with the price of gas, you want something more efficient. And so that's creating a greater need or want for used cars that are more modern. Mm-hmm. So people aren't really buying any cars, used cars that are maybe over 10 years since technology was added to them back in the 1990s and it's expanded now to where you can't fix your car like you and I did. I had my first Mustang. I could take apart with a screwdriver, a wrench, and a pair of pliers. Right?
Yeah. No, I completely rebuilt engine in one of my cars way back when. So Bruce is wondering, not to be an isolationist, but why don't we produce these products here? And is it that much cheaper to produce the widgets somewhere else? Well, one thing is the weight of them, of course. Shipping them is nothing, to get them here. But the well, there's several reasons. One is the cost of the land here, the cost of construction, unions, the whole, you know, the whole nine yards of, you know, it's just cost effective to make it somewhere else until there's a problem in getting them. And then I think probably we might see some companies decide, maybe some of the bigger companies will decide, you know what, I think we need to make our own chips for our own cars. And make
They should have made that decision a long time ago. The reason Canada produces so many parts for the U.S. is twofold. Oil, we have an abundance of it, so we can produce it cheaper. Mm-hmm. Also, labor is less expensive because it's paid in Canadian dollars. So, it, mm-hmm. you know, producing
the product, you got a 30% reduction there in the cost. Yeah, that's right. So, yeah.
And then the cost of shipping it is really reduced because it's not that far. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the Ambassador Bridge.
You're into Detroit and you're ready to go.
And you're into Detroit and ready to go from. You know, across a river, you know, into Ontario.
Through the grandma's house we go.
And, you know, that's why the North American Free Trade Agreement wasn't about Canada producing more cars. It was really about Mexico because, you know, manufacturers, as we know, were heading to Mexico in an effort to build new plants. And, mm-hmm. you know, and that was hurting U.S. industry and the economy. And incredibly, you know, the party of labor and unions did nothing about it. But, mm-hmm. you know, your previous president decided something had to be done. So, you know, as he said throughout the campaign in 2016, it was the worst trade agreement ever established, you know, during the Clinton administration in 92. And then also, as a result of it, he, you know, Clinton opened up trading with China. Now China's become, you know, one of the world's largest, producers of both electric cars and cars, but it's mm-hmm. for its own market.
True.
Principally.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, the great thing about this story is that it's allowed the existence of a whole industry, you know, sort of a in the middle industry, and mm-hmm. you know, and that's all the auto trailers and used dealership. You know, we all know the stories of buying a car from a used salesman, but
yeah, right.
At the end of the day.
The guy with a striped coat and plaid pants.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there's a real importance to this because talking about the size of this industry combined with the size of the existing auto industry, you're talking about a huge move forward in the 21st century, basically replacing mm-hmm. anywhere from 2 to 3 million jobs worldwide, which affect... Mm-hmm. you know, one job, you know, supports seven, you know, you're talking about 15 to 20 million people worldwide that basically, you know, have a lifestyle, whether in a developing country or the first world, mm-hmm. because of both new and used cars. And it's like the airplane industry, you know, these are the two cash flow industries for the entire mm-hmm. banking system, loans, yeah. cash mm-hmm. flow, you know, consuming, gasoline, allowing consumers to go out and buy. I mean, the impact of making this transition from the combustion engine to electric is a massive undertaking. There's 650 million cars on the road right now worldwide. That's a lot of cars to replace.
That's a lot of cars. Well, the other thing we've got to think about, Shane, is when you bring up, you were talking about car loans, the Fed is poised to raise interest rates, and that's going to compound this situation even more. You're talking about a $65,000 pickup truck, or a Lincoln announced this morning, I think they're coming out with their version of electric cars, and they want to have 20% of them in 5 years or 10 years or something like that. Mm-hmm. So.
But the issue that you have, particularly with electric vehicles, and bringing it up just to make a point, is that the transition of the industrial complex to manufacturing. Mm-hmm. Two bigger problems. It's highly expensive, you know. I mean, the cost of making the transition mm-hmm. because you're buying all new equipment that are robots. And then mm-hmm. secondly, the people that are being replaced you know, their union contracts about it, and the benefits that people in the industry get if they're replaced by a machine. And so on top of the capital cost of making the transition, you know, the manufacturing industry ends up, of cars, ends up with a capital increase of, you know, retirement benefits, you know, for the people they're laying off. So it's like a double whammy. I don't think you're going to see less expensive cars because they're electric. I just don't see. I go and look at a Toyota pickup truck. It's, you know, got a 10% tax on it coming into Canada and the United States anyway.
Yeah.
But a new one's $75,000. I mean, I don't understand how anyone can afford at potentially 10% interest, right?
Well, depending on
to buy, I guess, a $75,000 car. So go out and buy a used Toyota pickup. You know, you're looking at 20 to 40 grand, depending on how old it is.
Yeah, Louis down in the inner city will loan you all you need, Shane.
That's right.
Out of the back of his van.
Yeah.
So. Exactly. Well, you mentioned earlier Hertz, Avis, and the big four companies, they buy 2 million cars a year.
That's right.
And trucks as well, you know, the U-Haul and these other Ryder and some of these other folks. And, you know, 92% of them, they turn over pretty quickly every year. And, you know, so that does stimulate the used car market to some extent. Most of those cars are going to end up in rural or urban areas, not rural areas, because they're going to be, you know, work with a dealer, local dealer in a big city. So whether that's going to help or not, I don't know.
Well, and you know, the car industry as a whole, both used and new, went through a huge transition, you know, 40 years ago. When the car industry decided they didn't want to be vertically integrated like the oil industry, and they got rid of, they sold the dealerships to individuals, and you know, and then the individuals were given the right to take cars, you know, from the manufacturer on an ongoing basis of sell and pay, and that helped. And then because of foreign competition, these dealerships were obviously had to acquire, you know, licensing rights to sell other products. So the consolidation of it back in the 90s and just after, you know, the first decade of the 21st century, you saw a lot of dealerships consolidate, you know, around four or five different types of cars. And because of what happened back in 2008, you know, and the great recession that came after that, it shrunk. So as everything's become tighter, which happens in a capital system like we have, you know, the competition for product is reduced. And that's another big cause where now here we are, you know, 15 years later after what we went through between 2008 and 2012, yeah, we're seeing that, you know, there's this strong cost of used car. The incredible thing is you can look on the internet and see there's these incredible numbers of new to 2 or 3 year old cars parked in huge parking places around the country by the auto industry because they can't shut down. They got to keep producing, right?
Like, yeah.
You know, between the fact you've got now an addition, in addition to new cars and used cars, you have all these unsold new cars. So again, the market is creating a real buyer's market, but they're trying to squeeze everyone. That's why I'm not sure I believe this thing about the chip issue. I think it's more or less a nomer to lead people to believe this is the best price you're going to get for a car. Well, wait 6 months because between what's happening now with the economy and real estate, the stock market, you can be assured a used car will be cheaper. Let me just throw this out because it's my piece of advice. If you're going to buy a used car, buy a used car that's less than 5 years old. Here's why. You want to sell it every year. You're better to buy a used car that's less than 5 years old and then just flip it every year in this market as it stands today. Don't be too giddy about buying an electric car yet, you know, because at some point interest rates will come back, but you don't want to get caught in that cycle of leasing a car or being tied up with a bank for a 3 to 5 year loan. You know, sell your car and you can instantly buy one. This is the great thing of the 21st century. Take the banks out, the dealers out, the car industry out, and on your own, you can buy locally, flip your car. I mean, it's so quick. You can sell the car you have, especially if you're a two-car family. So that's my advice, because you'll on a used car that's less than 5 years old, after a year, you'll still get 70 to 80, maybe even 90% of your money back, depending on the vehicle you pick.
Yeah. Yeah. There are popular ones. And well, the other thing we got to talk about too is when, you know, you mentioned earlier when the competition came over from overseas, when the Japanese began to come in and go against Detroit, they located in right to work states, Kentucky, Tennessee, and in Detroit, as you rightly mentioned, every car that rolled off the Detroit lot had about $3,000 worth of union benefits tied to it. Vacations, health care, every other damn thing you can think of. And the other thing, too, that is going to be something that we're going to see down the line, I think, more and more as we move toward the electric car situation. A few years back, I did a bunch of talks around the country for the mobile electronic dealers. They're the people that put the sound systems in cars, you know, the big speakers and, you know, the fancy radios and CD players and all that stuff.
Sure.
But yeah, the radio runs through the wipers.
I know.
They designed this so that these people can't make a living. You got to take it to the dealer.
That's right.
To have anything done to this thing. And I think that's what we're going to see more and more. You're going to see a lot of local mechanics are going to have a harder time, you know, making a living, because these cars are going to be designed where you got to take it to a dealer. There's no other option. Well,
yeah. And basically they already are. 30 years ago in the 90s, that's what the big transition was. And the reason for that is exactly what you mentioned. People didn't like dealerships because they charged too much, number one.
Yeah.
They didn't like them because they had to give their car up because, you know, the dealership said, we'll have it back to you in a week. And then the dealerships were forced to lend people cars because of that problem to keep the business.
Yeah.
But the third thing is that the small mechanic was competing with them. So as technology came along, you know, you open the hood, you needed a computer. And now, you know, they charge you $300-$400 to go into a dealership. They open the hood and they plug it into the computer. In 5 minutes, they know what's wrong. But they charge you $300 or $400.
For that.
Yeah, exactly. So
for that gas.
Exactly. And so, you know, when you have a colossal industry right now, I mean, you know, world production is staggering in the countries. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's 30 countries that produce cars, and you know, from China producing 26, U.S. 9, Japan, seven and a half. But Japan, they say they produce 7.8 million cars, but they also produce 2.5 million cars in the U.S. So, you know,
you got Germany, you got France, you got England, you got all
Brazil,
of those,
Spain,
Italy,
Thailand, Russia produces a car. Yeah, France, of course, we know about those fancy looking cars from the 50s. They still produce those ugly looking cars. But Turkey, Indonesia, the Czech Republic, they produce over a million. Slovakia produces over a million, but mostly it's foreign licensed companies, but of course, the United Kingdom, because they have to produce that left sided car, right?
Yeah. I pulled up next to somebody at a stoplight here in Bozeman that was on the left side of passenger car.
So. Yeah, it's quite fascinating. They're legal to drive anywhere. People aren't limited to drive them, but I've driven them in a couple of places, and it's very strange. It's not, look, you know, the dynamic of looking everything from, you know, instead of your right side, instead of your left side is.
Well, you just have to assume, you just have to notice everything you're doing is wrong.
That's right.
Yeah. That's wrong. I'm turning here. This is wrong. I'm changing lanes. That's wrong. I'm in the wrong
lane.
That's
right. It's quite remarkable. And so again, I think that the transition that they keep telling it's like so many things that, like you say, that, you know, the government tells us where we're going with a problem and what they're going to do. But, you know, this all started back in 72 with the big recession, mm-hmm. you know, before Jimmy Carter came along. Yeah. And you know, government went from oversight and managing, you know, to basically funding and running, you know, the economy, basically, because of debt. You know, yeah. they went from cash and oversight and you know, regulation to, you know, managing and trying to manage the economy through, you know, since then, five recessions.
Yeah.
And, you know, they all claim that, you know, a recession is from a peak in the economy to a low and move up again, and that they're very short. Well, they may be short, but they still hurt a huge number of people, and we've seen that. And the last recession didn't hurt anyone during COVID from 19 to 22, basically, or 21.
Yeah.
But the one we're in now is going to hurt a lot of people. And, you know, it's not going to be a short 1 year run, because they're not talking about it. They don't want to even admit that it exists, but it does. You just have to look at
it's coming. Yeah. I mean, it's undeniable.
We're in it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're already in it. Yeah. And, every recession in history, except for the COVID one, Shane,
that's right,
was preceded by higher food costs and energy pricing. Every single one, and
the other thing that every recession has is unique. Number one, it's always been caused by something different. Mm-hmm. So you could, and it was not anything that anyone usually could expect or do anything about or manage.
Yeah, it's a black swan.
A black swan event. And then the second thing is every recession we've seen since 72 is worse than the one before.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, you know, this whole industry becomes a bumper of a benefit the millennials and the Z's, because used cars are going to be cheap, you know, in that kind of a cycle. And, new cars, they're going to have a problem, and we'll see what happens. But I see the government is wanting it, that, you know, the greeners want, they want to see some of these major corporations be acquired or shrink, you know, because it'll be easier to get rid of them, you know, later, right?
Yeah, right. Well, every one of those recessions, though, Shane, we've come out better on the other side. They last about anywhere from 12 to 18 months normally, but the market goes up, things become a lot more stable, and, you know, in another 10 years, we have another one.
That's right. But the sad side of this is that the reason for that is that debt has a lot to do with it. Mm-hmm. So capitalist debt, corporate debt, you know, it ends up being the switch because of consolidation, because of corporate debt. That's what we've seen in these five recessions. And government just keeps spending. You know, they don't, you know, their argument is, well, we have to spend more because we got to save the economy. And there you go. They think they can manage their way out of it. Mm-hmm. But the pain suffered by everyone in the middle and the lower class in first world countries like ours is harsh. It's just a very harsh thing to come to terms with.
Yeah. Well, as you know, back in the 80s, we went through 10% unemployment, 15% home loans, 20% prime rate,
that's
10%
crazy.
Inflation, 10% unemployment. We survived that somehow.
Yeah, that recession was caused by commercial real estate.
Yep.
You know, the other big one was 87. That was caused by the collapse of the Japanese market and particularly their stock market. And then, you know, we had the
2008, 2009,
the
dot com. Yeah, you're right. In the 1990s,
in 98, 99, mm-hmm. And then 9/11 and the slowdown of technology back in that. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the mortgage-backed securities for personal or residential mm-hmm. real estate in 07-08. Yeah. So, boy, here we find ourselves looking mm-hmm. back and wondering, wow, after a remarkable basically 15-year mm-hmm. run, because, you know, the Fed has used quantum easing, yeah. Which means they kept buying the U.S. debt. That's how Japan tried to survive from the 87 crash. Mm-hmm. They would sell debt to the banks, and then the Bank of Japan would buy it back. And they're the ones that came up with this, you know, kiting mm-hmm. debt, basically. Yeah. And Bernanke picked up on it. And, you know, now you're at a situation where, you know, the Fed can't buy anymore, and now they want to sell it.
So there we are. So
here we are.
So all this contributes to what we're talking about today.
That's right.
Car business, you name it. All these things, you know, every consequence has an unintended consequence over there somewhere. Yeah. You know, so that's what we.
And I have to say, my good friend Tom here has motivated me to join a site that he's on where he writes every day. And I posted my first story yesterday about the U.S. economy and the U.S. debt. And I hope it works. I'll see if I get any interest in it and try it for, you know, half a dozen articles and see if I get the following you've got already.
Well, we'll talk about how to do it, because there is a method to getting it done. So, it's been pretty good to me. The first what we're talking about is medium.com. It's a site where you where people who write go and write stories about everything. You know, it's one of the top 200 sites on the internet, and I made close to $400 last month.
Excellent.
Not quite as much this month. I'm probably going to do three something, but
Do you have to give them information for them to give that to you to your bank? Is that how it works?
Yeah. You sign up for something called Stripe, and they automatically deposit it in your account.
Yeah. Then someone has access to your bank.
They don't have access to your bank.
Well, you give them your banking information to deposit it, so now they have your banking information online.
Well, so what?
I'm not saying so what. I'm just saying that for I'm old style. Okay, I like paper.
But you don't buy anything. You don't buy anything online.
No.
Oh.
I still. I used to, but now I don't, because, you know, I'm retired. But the problem that I have is I'm old school. You know, and
all right.
You know, I don't want to go online with my bank even.
Well, here would be my suggestion to you. Go to another bank, open an account for $10 or whatever the minimum is. Get your steak knives and your toaster.
There you go.
And just use it for that. Because I have one that I just use for this. So,
We always advise small businesses, right?
Yeah.
If you're going to open a business, you know, you do your personal banking one bank and do your business banking at another bank, because you don't want the same banker knowing your business and your life.
That would be, I don't know. Maybe, there's another school of thought on that, Shane. If you have your personal account there, they know you. And because you've got both accounts there, you can go in with a little more leverage if you need money. But Depends on the bank.
And banks are like lawyers. I don't trust them.
Okay. Here we've got a couple of home-owned banks, I should say. So.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Well, I'm just saying, you know.
We're really off the.
No, we're not. This has everything to do with used cars. I mean, you know, if you have a business and you need a truck for your business, you know, I think, you go to a different bank and work it out with them. And your personal car you have with your personal bank, and I just think you keep it separate. And you never know about banks, because you know one could have problems and the other not. So
I don't know. Mine's guaranteed for $250,000, so that's why I have to use multiples.
Yeah, that's right. But that's that's guaranteed by the Federal Deposit Insurance, right?
Yeah, right. Yes.
They may not be able to cover you, buddy.
Guaranteed by the feds, who we trust every day of our lives, right? Yeah. We're from the government. Yeah. We're here to help you. Absolutely right.
So we're going to solve this problem.
All right. Well, I think we've done enough here. Hey, don't forget, we're on the radio this coming Saturday. It's on the crawl down below there every Saturday. We're on from 8 to 11 a.m. Mountain Time. Listen live, KMMSAM.com. You don't have to sign up for anything. No personal information, no email, no banking numbers needed. You just go and listen. And you can call us. You can text us. We'll actually talk to you like live human beings, believe it or not. So. Yeah, so we hope you'll do that. So once again, Saturday, 8 to 11 Mountain Time, KMMSAM.com. Click on Listen Now. That's all you got to do. That's it.
And give everybody a tease for next Tuesday and Thursday.
Well, you know what we're going to talk about. Student loans, Tuesday.
Next Tuesday.
Right?
And next then Tuesday. We have the great Mike, Money Man. Yeah.
Mike McCormick will be in.
On Thursday the 29th.
Yeah, so we got some big shows planned for you. This is our 701st episode today.
That's fabulous.
So that's been a long haul to get there. So can 1,000 be far behind? I don't know. We'll see.
It's going to be, buddy. It's going to be. It's going to get better. Right.
Well, we're happy about that. So, let's see. Didn't the Indians trust the government? Absolutely, Bruce. They certainly did. And... That's not a good thing, I guess. So, all right, that's going to wrap it up for us. Thanks for being here, and we will see you on the next podcast. That will be next Tuesday, 10 a.m. Mountain Time.